Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway, Part 7, Chapter 2, Anna Karenina. Levin is throwing money away city folk style. Wait, am I in the right one? Why do I feel like that's not the right one? Let me just check. Nope, that's the right one. I am Norwegian, said I've said that Levin is my kind of guy more than once, but I have to say it again. He finds paying calls, simply dropping in on someone, embarrassing and awkward. Levin doesn't like to talk about their use of money, but insists that it's fine, except that at the end of the chapter it's revealed that their bank account is empty. Uh-oh. Hopefully they won't join Dolly down there in Pauperville. Kitty set up an intervention with Steve, Levin and Arseny. which makes this the first time in many hundreds of pages that the middle sister, Natalia, has been brought up. I tried to do some calculations to figure out how much money we are dealing with when we are reading The Brothers Karamazov. Since I was embarrassingly off, I just Googled it this time. Someone has to take over. Swim said the Mama Fishy's Daily Factoids. Well, please do. 1879... Average salary of a worker in Moscow was 189 rubles per year. We can go the other way and look at the currency exchange rates from 1834 to 1896. $1 was cost 1 to 3 rubles. Another source gives the average monthly wage of an average worker 25 rubles per month or $19,000 per year. Meaning that Levin spent the average man's whole monthly wage in one meal for his family. Earlier in the book, it's mentioned that Steva had a yearly income of 6,000 rubles. That's the average wage of 32 people put into the pockets of one man. A decent house at the time was around 3,000 rubles. Of course, these people live in a completely different world with different demands, which Levin is discovering quickly. Wow. Yeah, they are the rich. They're the cream of the crop. The rich of the rich. The 1%. Sluggy with 3G said, if Levin thinks he is spending a ton of money now, wait until he learns how much having kids costs. Apparently not that much for these folk. You just palm them off to one of your servants. Servants only cost, what is it, 25 rubles per month. So, you know, easy peasy. JMama8779 said, uh-oh, I'm reminded a bit of old Count Rostov's money woes in this chapter. Oh yeah, old Rostov. Yeah, it is a bit reminiscent of that. Tolstoy just only seems to have a set amount of tricks up his sleeve with his characters and what they come up against. Charolette says, I empathize with both Levin and Kitty so much in the interaction over the Countess Boll. I have definitely had that irrational worry that if I contact someone, they will just stare at me and wonder what I'm doing there. But I have also been the wife trying to encourage her husband to do something I know is good social sense, and he doesn't see why. Lol. On the other hand, I don't empathize with Kitty's calmness about pregnancy and childbirth. I was impressed when she encouraged Levin to go to the concert without her. When I was pregnant, I was always secretly hoping my husband would stay home with me, and she said she wasn't scared of childbirth. I was terrified. And I'm guessing the actual risks of childbirth were much higher back then. Oh yeah, no guess about that. They definitely were. Okay. It's 3 a.m, so forgive me if I just go straight into reading the next chapter. Chapter 3 goes like this. During his stay in Moscow, Levin had renewed his intimacy with his fellow student of university days, now Professor Katavasov, whom he had not seen since his marriage. He liked Katavasov because of his clear and simple outlook on life. Levin thought Katavasov's clear outlook resulted from the poverty of his nature, and Katavasov thought Levin's inconsequential opinions resulted from a lack of mental discipline, but Katavasov's clarity pleased Levin, and the abundance of Levin's undisciplined thoughts pleased Katavasov, and they liked to meet and argue. Levin had read some parts of his book to Katavasov, who liked it. Happening to meet Levin at a public lecture the previous day, Katavasov told him that the celebrated Metrov, whose article had so pleased Levin, was in Moscow and was much interested in what Katavasov had told him of Levin's work. that he would be at his house next day about 11 in the morning and would be very pleased to make Levin's acquaintance. "Decidedly you are improving, quite a pleasure to see it," said Katavasov as he welcomed Levin in the little drawing room. "I heard the bell and thought it's impossible he can have come punctually. Well, what do you think of the Montenegrins? They are born warriors." "What's happened?" asked Levin. Katavasov, in a few words, told him the latest news and, taking him to the study, introduced Levin to a tall, sturdy, and very agreeable-looking man. It was Metrov. The conversation rested for a time on politics and on how the highest circles in Petersburg regarded the latest events. Metrov quoted words on the subject attributed to the emperor and one of the ministers, which he had from a reliable source. Katavasov, however, had heard with equal definiteness that the emperor said something quite different. Levin tried to imagine a situation in which both utterances might have been made, and the subject was dropped. He has written almost a book on the natural condition of the labourer in relation to the land, said Katavasov. I'm not a specialist, but a naturalist. I liked he's not taking humanity as something outside zoological laws, but on the contrary, regarding it as dependent on its surroundings, and searching in this dependence for the laws of its development. That is very interesting, said Metrov. I really began to write a book on agriculture, but being occupied with the chief instrument in agriculture, the labourer, said Levin with a blush, I involuntarily arrived at quite unexpected results. And Levin began carefully, as if feeling his way, to expound his views. He knew that Metrov had written an article running counter to the generally accepted teachings of political economy, but how far he could hope for his sympathy with his own novel views Levin did not know, and could not gather from the expression of the professor's quiet and intelligent face. But in what do you perceive the peculiar quality of the Russian worker? Asked Metrov. In his zoological qualities, so to say, or in the conditions in which he is placed? Levin detected in this very question a thought with which he did not agree, but he continued to expand his view, which was that the Russian labourer's view of the land is quite different from that of other nations. To illustrate this theory, he hastened to add that, in his opinion, the Russian people's view results from their consciousness of a vocation to populate the vast unoccupied tracts in the East. It is easy to be led astray when drawing conclusions as to the general vocation of a people, said Metrov, interrupting Levin. The condition of the labourer will always depend on his relation to land and capital. And without letting Levin finish explaining his idea, Metrov began expounding to him the peculiarity of his own teaching. What that peculiarity consisted in, Levin did not understand, because he did not even try to do so. He saw that Metrov, like the others, despite the article in which he refused the teachings of the economist, still regarded the position of the Russian labourer merely from the standpoint of capital, wages, and rent, though he had to admit that in the eastern and greater part of Russian rents were still nil, that wages for 9/10 of the 80 millions of the Russian population represented only sustenance for themselves, and that capital did not yet exist except in the form of the most primitive tools, yet he regarded every labourer merely from that one point of view. Though, on many points he disagreed with the economists and had his own theory of wages, which he explained to Levin. Levin listened reluctantly and at first made objections. He wanted to interrupt Metrov and to state his own idea, which he considered would render a further statement of Metrov's view superfluous, but afterwards, having convinced himself that they looked at the question so differently that they would never understand one another, he ceased making objections and merely listened. Though what Metrov was saying now no longer interested him at all, he felt some pleasure all the same in hearing him. His vanity was flattered by the fact that so learned a man should explain his opinions to him so willingly, so carefully, and with such faith that in Levin's knowledge of the subject that he sometimes, by a mere hint, indicated a whole aspect of the matter. Levin attributed this to his own worth, not knowing that Metrov, who had exhausted the matter with all his intimates, was particularly pleased to speak about it to any fresh person, and in general willingly spoke to everybody about the subject with which he was occupied and with which was not yet clear to himself. I'm afraid we shall be late, said Katavasov, glancing at the clock as soon as Metrov had finished his disquisition. Yes. There is a meeting. Sorry. Yes, there is a meeting of the Society of Amateurs in honor of Svintich's Jubilee. Katavasov went on, in answer to Levin's inquiry, Peter Ivanovich Metrov and I have arranged to go. I have promised to read a paper on his work on zoology. Come with us, it will be very interesting. Yes, it is quite time, remarked Metrov. Come with us, and then, if you care to, come home with me. I should very much like to hear your work. I know it is still so unfinished, but I shall be pleased to go to the meeting. And have you heard I gave in a separate report? Katavasov called out from the next room, where he was changing his coat. They began a conversation about a controversy in the university, which was one of the most important events in Moscow that winter. The three old professors on the council had not accepted the opinion of the younger ones. The younger ones presented a separate resolution. This resolution was, in the opinion of some people, a dreadful one, while according to others it was very simple and just. The professors were divided into two camps. The side to which Katavasov belonged accused their opponents of mean treachery and deception, while the others imputed youthfulness and disrespect for authority. Levin, though he did not belong in the university, had since his arrival in Moscow more than once heard and conversed about this affair, and had formed his own opinion on the subject, and he took part in the conversation, which was continued in the street until they all three arrived at the old university buildings. The meeting had already begun. At the table covered with a cloth at which Katavasov and Metrov took their seats, six men were sitting, and one of them, with his head bent close over a manuscript, was reading something. Levin took one of the vacant chairs which were standing around the table and in a whisper asked a student who was sitting there that was being read. With a displeased look at Levin, the student replied, "The biography." Though the biography of the scientist did not interest Levin, he listened involuntarily and learned a few interesting facts about the celebrated man's life. When the reader had finished, the chairman thanked him and read aloud some verses for the jubilee sent by the poet Ment, adding a few words of thanks to the poet. Then Katavasov, in his loud, strident voice, read his paper on the scientific work of the man whose jubilee it was. When Katavasov had finished, Levin looked at his watch, saw that it was getting on for two, and thought that there would be no time to read his manuscript to Metrov before the concert, and besides, he no longer felt inclined to do so. During the readings, he had also been thinking about the talk they had had. It was now clear to him that though Metrov's views might perhaps be of importance, his own ideas were of importance too, and these views could be formulated and led to results only if each of them worked separately along the lines he had selected, but communicating them to one another would not lead to any result. Making up his mind to decline Metrov's invitation, therefore, Levin approached him as soon as the meeting ended. Metrov introduced him to the chairman, with whom he was discussing the political news. In this connection, Metrov told the chairman the same thing that he had already told Levin, and Levin made the same remarks as he had made in the morning, but for the sake of diversity expressed also a new view of his own, which had but just entered his head. After that, they began talking about the university question. As Levin had already heard all that, he hastened to tell Metrov that he regretted he was unable to accept his invitation, shook hands, and drove off to the Lvovs. Alrighty, another chapter done. That's that one. Thank you very much for listening. I will see you tomorrow.